play. What's up? Yeah. Yeah.
Kane is in the building, nigga.
Yeah. It's alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they will see the thunder? Just remember when you come up. The show goes on.
And welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast, previewing the 2018 RSM Classic. I am one of your hosts, Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at BDentric, and joined by my other co-host, as always. Find him on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. Jesse, how we doing, man?
I'm doing all right, dude. It was a depressing week for me in sports, so looking for a pickup here somewhere. Supposed to, you know, I'm a Kentucky fan, and it's not a good week to be a Kentucky fan.
No, I wasn't going to bring up the thing that was called Zion Williamson and company, but you started with that, but I'll leave it at that because that was wow. But yeah, when it comes to the PGA Tour, the OHL Classics in the books, Cooch, I am so pumped on this. I tweeted it out earlier this morning. I said, for those that have listened to the AP pod pretty much from the beginning, knows how pro Cooch we are on this show. And we mention often how he doesn't get respected because, you know, he's not the big flashy guy, but he always contends. First W since, I think, what, 14?
14, correct, yeah.
Him and even Libby Westwood, like he talked about. So any thoughts on Cooch? Because I got worried on Sunday when he was only like 200 and Danny Lee and company were right on his heels.
Yeah, well, I mean, he played well enough the first 3 days where he didn't really – he could kind of coast in. That's what he did on Sunday. But, yeah, I mean, first win since 2014 for Coocher. Same weekend Lee Westwood wins one over in Europe. Vijay Singh won the Champions Tour event, and Bernhard Langer won their version of the FedEx Cup. So it was a good week for old guys. Cooch didn't have a very good year last year. The year before he was almost a guaranteed top 10 every time he played. So I know a lot of people had kind of gotten off the bandwagon there, but I'm glad to see him get a win, man. I mean, he's just, he's one of those, there's a Twitter handle out there called at Good Guy Coocher or something along those lines. And it makes total sense. He's just like, it just seems like a really good guy. Obviously, I don't know him personally, but he just seems like a really down-to-earth cat. So I'm happy for him.
Yeah, whenever we someday, you know, become big enough to interview PGA Tour golfers, you know, in the year 2020 or something, 2021, Cooch is a guy I love to just sit down with because you hear the stories that, you know, you watch him play, he's got the sweater on, looks like the old guy, the good guy. He wears Skechers for crying out loud. But he's the guy that sits there also, like, mumbling F-bombs and, like, sarcastic asshole comments to people. And he's that little quiet antagonizer, basically, I'd love to play golf and just talk with that guy.
Did you see where Zach Johnson's caddy, pulled out mid-round and Coocher's wife picked up the bag and carried it for Coocher, carried it for Zach the rest of that round?
I did not see that.
That was on Thursday. Yeah, it was on Thursday. And she is hot.
If people only knew what we talked about before the podcast, there is some hotness going around the PGA Tour now.
There's a lot of wives on tour that are good looking, and you know, I mean, Coocher's in his 40s, isn't he?
He's doing well.
She's really, really, really good looking.
You mentioned ZJ's losing his guy on the bag. Did you see Coocher when he went there? He hired a local caddy from the course and won the tournament with this guy. You know how much that guy's life probably changed just from winning the caddy money from this week?
Yeah, I heard that as well, that he didn't go down there with a caddy, so he hired somebody when he got down there. So yeah, another awesome story there as far as that goes. And yeah, I don't know what happened with his other caddy, but I might consider keeping that guy on.
Yeah, I didn't know what the deal was. I don't know if it was, you know, going to Mexico, maybe he didn't have his passport, who knows what was going on. But I didn't read any articles on it. They're definitely out there, but PGA Tour just kind of tweeted out pictures. It was Cooch gets with the guy, and then when they win, the guy, he's a small little fella, gives Cooch a big old hug, and then Cooch signs one of the flags. Like, he says, like, muchos gracias, like, says it in Spanish, so-and-so, thanks for the win, Matt Coocher, signed a flag for him. So it was pretty cool. It's like probably the highlight of that guy's life. Plus, like I said, that like money's taking him.
Yeah, right, probably now, 100K.
Yeah, the peso's worth like 22 pesos to the dollar. So this guy's loaded right now.
So he's got like 2.2 million pesos.
Yep, he's rolling. Like El Chapo's going to become looking for him pretty soon. You better watch out. It's freaking wild. But before we go down a rabbit hole, Cam Champ, another great, great week for people that say he's only a bomber. I think twice. Now, when we get to today's show, his price has gone through the roof already and really makes you debate what you're going to do with him. But a lot of good performances. Course history, Griot did well. You saw Answer, you know, he didn't dominate, but another solid performance. A lot of these young guys are putting back-to-back tournaments together. And I know it's these kind of middle-of-the-pack fields, but I think we have a hell of a year in front of us again, Jesse.
Yeah, yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. Cam played really well. I think it was on Friday or Saturday. He shot 10 Friday. Under. Friday, shot 10 under par. He's just legit talent. I think I really think his game will translate to a lot of different courses that people don't think they necessarily should, because he hits at 360 off the tee. But when you putt, if you got a good putting stroke, I mean, it doesn't really matter how far you hit it, because it's really what it comes down to with these guys every week, is it's a putting contest.
Yeah, we talk about that all the time. It's like who's feeling it, who's not. You know, the 1 week Rory won last year, his putter was like on fire. Otherwise, we say it time and time again with so many guys. If they can putt, they're going to contend. And
right.
It's common. And that was one of Champ's big things last year, is his putter was super inconsistent. And so far this year, it's working well, given we've talked in these previous podcasts that these tournaments, greens aren't the most difficult in the world speed-wise and everything. So, hey, play what you got in front of you. That's all you can do.
Right.
But it's definitely something to keep an eye on with Cam. You got a guy like Jordan Spieth missing the cut in a field like this, Jesse. How concerned should people be? Like, is there an injury with Spieth, or is it all between the ears? Like, what are we doing with this guy?
It's one of two things. It's either all between the ears, or he just literally had the best couple years of putting ever. Because there's no excuse for him missing the cut down there, unless he just completely mailed it in and didn't give a shit and wanted to go back to the house. So yeah, I don't know. Ian missed the cut too. I know that buried you and me, yeah. And that sucked. But I mean, the cut was, you know, 4 under par. I mean, yeah, that's a pretty low cut. It's for Spieth. I don't know, man. Moving forward, I don't know where he's going to be at. We'll have to take a wait and see approach with him, kind of like Tiger, and see if he can do anything this year.
Yeah, and people that listen to the show would know we pretty much never play Spieth. We've almost made it a rule you can't use him as your bust of the week. It's like it's kind of known he's in a funk. But you mentioned him real quick, and it's one of the last things I wanted to hit on, unless you have more, is I know he missed the cut again, and he's done that a couple times this year. But when he's usually right on the number, or like one or two shots out, like he's real close. And but when he makes the cut, he contends. And I just want to echo to people that the demand to play the Panda every week, which I think is foolish. I will play M every week and roll that dice over Panda, no matter what price difference. I don't care what the price difference is. He can be my Panda while you guys keep playing Panda and just pray he makes a cut, let alone contend. Because when Sungjae makes a cut, he will contend. So that's just my difference there for people saying, well, because I'm going to go back to him again on this podcast and tell you when he's at $8,000, he is in play again. And I just want to echo it. That's the difference between the two to me, if anybody has any questions. But any final thoughts on this OHL Classic? It was interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, it's over, so let's move on.
All right, let's go to the RSM Classic, 156-man field. The first two rounds are on two different courses. Give us a little past event history here, Jesse.
Yeah, like you said, it's two different courses, one Seaside, one's Plantation. It's down in Georgia, RSM Classic. It's been played every year there since 2010. Last year, Austin Cook was the champion. He beat J.J. Spawn by 4 shots. He shot 21 under. The year before that, Mackenzie Hughes out of Canada was a champion, 17 under, over a handful of guys in a playoff. And Kevin Kisner is also a past champion here. Robert Streb, Kirk are really the only other two notables here. This field is pretty weak this year, especially.
Yeah, when I went through the field, I was, you know, usually we get a couple big dogs out here, and I think it's the rotation thing we keep talking about. There's a reason, like the last two tournaments at the Shriners and this OHL, you got the Spieths, the Fowlers of the world. I think they're mixing and matching now, because some of those, like Kuchar played the last couple years here, he's not in it, and so on and so forth. So something to definitely keep in mind here. You mentioned, get to the course preview. It's in St. Simon, Georgia, Sea Island Resort. You're going to hear the term Sea Island Mafia all over the place, because there's a lot of pros that live down here, like Kisner, ZJ, Webb's a Georgia guy. There's a ton of guys. Sink's a Georgia guy. They either live close by or they have affiliations in the area, basically. You're going to hear a lot of ACC and SEC terms, because there's a lot of SEC tournaments at this course and some ACC ones as well. So there's a lot of intermixing, however you want to look at it. I kind of want to just do who's playing well, but there is a little bit to it if you really want to dig in, and I'm not going to do it this week, though. The two courses you mentioned, the Seaside course will be on the weekend, and then one of the 2 days, depending on their drawings, and then the Plantation course. The Seaside course that you'll see most of is a par 70, 7,005 yards, short course, of course. Very large greens. If you're in the fairway, roughly 80% of the greens are hitting regulation from the fairway. So it's a less than driver course. Obviously, the greens are Bermuda with a little bit of – sometimes they just mix and match different seeds. Literally, that's what the article said. You have to talk to someone that year to see what they put out to mix with it. Otherwise, it's just straight Bermuda. Usually about 11 on the stimp, so not super fast, not super slow. Pretty simple stuff. It's a very much a scoring course. You see scores get into the 20s. Just like last weekend, the biggest thing was the Seaside course, because of the name, think about it, it's on the seaside. They get a lot of wind possibilities like we get at that OHL Classic last week, so a lot of crosswinds. That's their biggest problem for the most part, but huge fairways. It's all about short game around the green and putting-wise, and then just hitting fairways. You don't have to drive it. Be accurate. Set yourself up. Super short stuff, nothing long. Most par fives are very drivable. So lots you can do there. Water comes into play on many of the holes and a lot of good sand traps strategically placed around the green. The Plantation course is a par 72. It is about 7,058 yards, a little bit longer, but it's also a par 72 instead of a par 70. So it's the much easier of the two scoring courses. It averages almost 1.5 shots easier than the Seaside course in recent years on average. So it's one of those, you need to watch the weather because like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it's supposed to rain, chances of shower even on Thursday. So if it's that wet, the course is going to just be like literally just hit it somewhere. It's not going to roll out. Do whatever you want, basically. And then Friday has a chance of being windy. So keep an eye on the weather. It might be beneficial to play Seaside guys Thursday, Plantation Friday. It all kind of depends because you want to avoid that wind on the Seaside. And then when it comes to the weekend, not much you can do there. Other than that, you can probably get way more detailed on this if you want. But Seaside's the main course. There's two courses. Very, very easy if you stay and play at this course. You should be putting up birdies pretty easily, like we've seen almost the whole fall, Jesse. So any key stats you're looking at here?
Yeah, just greens and regulation. You know, a lot of course history here too, so I check that out. Driving distance plays a little bit of a factor for me. You know, again, I've talked about the last couple of weeks. We don't have any shots gained data from last week. We don't have it from the earlier, so it's hard to use that shots gained data because it's just not – it's not there, but I do have stats from the last couple of golf tournaments where we didn't have shots gained data. We've got some greens and regulation stats and that kind of thing. So that's kind of why I look that way versus the other way. And then I do pay quite a bit of attention to course history. Now, we do have Shot Tracker back this week.
Yes,
thank you. At least on one golf course, Seaside. I don't think they have it on Plantation.
Well, why would they? Why would they just give us everything? We have to wait for 2019 for that.
I mean, why not? You know, I mean, PGA Tour has so much money, but anyways.
That's why I can't figure any of it out, but maybe it's a – who knows? Yeah.
I don't
know. But, yeah, I agree. You know, just accuracy off the tee to green game, the short game around the green, like I said, greens and reg, and then drafting scoring is going to be huge again this week. We talk about it a lot, and that brings us to fanshare sports.com. They're dominating the golf and the football projection landscapes, and you can look at some recent things like – who's coming in good? Because you mentioned there's a lot of the past event history, which there's a ton of. There's also some pretty good current form now because we've got a handful of tournaments in concession, and a lot of these guys in the field have been playing most of these. So in the last three events, your top DraftKings scorers, J.J. Spahn leads the way, averaging almost 98 DraftKings points per start. Cam Champ makes sense as it's second. Chesson Hadley is third. Our boy Sam Ryder is fourth. He's playing well. You know, big Friday, got him into the weekend and did his thing. The boy we mentioned a lot because he's been cheap. He definitely got a price bump this week is Richie Wawinski, T3'd it last week. Then you got Nick Watney, Joaquin Niemann, HP3 had another huge week. Jim Furyk dominated last week. He's a short course type guy. This could fit him. And then Brian Gay rounds out the top 10. So a lot of guys that make sense if you've been paying attention to the PGA Tour. Where it gets a little fun, though, Jesse, is in the last six events, Sam Ryder leads the way in DraftKings scoring. J.J. Spahn is second. HV3 is third. Ches Reavy withdrew, so they need to update that. But then Johnson Wagner is fifth. He's cheap this week. Joaquin Niemann, sixth. Seth Reeves coming in hot at seventh. Henrik Norlander, who doesn't play a ton on the PGA Tour, but he does very well at this course. He is eighth. Bryce Garnett, ninth, and Jim Furyk, again, he's 10th in his last six events, averaging 72 DraftKings points per round. So no one ever owns Furyk. We talk about it all the time with him. And the last thing I want to mention here is last year at this tournament, your drafting guys, for the most part, you know, Austin Cook led the way, then Brian Gay, the guys that finished towards the top. But we talked about it last week. I thought it was interesting, and it showed when Danny Lee, you know, came in with a lot of birdies last year, didn't finish strong. We saw what he did this year, finishing second. So if you want to talk about average birdies per round last year at the RSM, Cook led the way, but then Brian Gay, J.J. Spahn, Vaughn Taylor was tied for second with 21 birdies. Michael Thompson, another guy to keep in mind, at 21. You got Brian Harmon, Ben Martin making his return. Chris Kirk, you already mentioned he's a past winner. Bud Cauley, and then Nicholas Lindheim at 19th. And most of these guys were not tagged highly at all. Cook had 17 tags leading the way out of these guys. Spahn had 12. Brian Harmon, 15. Kirk, 11. Everybody else in single digits. Some not tagged at all. This is another one of those tournaments where you can get crazy and have some fun with it, Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
All right. With all that being said, let's get into the DraftKings portion of the podcast. Kicking it off from the 10K and above, you got Webb Simpson at $11,800. I mentioned Cam Champ with a bump. He's up to 10.9. J.J. Spahn's at 10.4, and Chesson Hadley's at 10.1. Remember, the pricing is going to seem weird because of the field strength, for one. But also, some of these prices, a little goofy. What's your thoughts here, Jesse?
Yeah, so the field is it's hard to get stomach some of these prices, but the field is just it's pretty weak. So just looking at Cam Champ, I mean, you know, he started the year at $7,100 at the Safeway Open, and now he's up to second highest price on the board because the dude just makes birdies. Like I said, I think he's probably course proof. I don't think it matters. So I like Cam this week. I don't think I'll be the only one, but I do like him the most of anybody else up top. Webb would be my next choice. Chesson Hadley, my third choice. Now, I've already seen a lot of chatter about J.J. Spahn. He played well here last year. We played well last week. So he's kind of got the perfect storm to be either super chalky, or everybody's going to think he's going to be chalky and lay off of him. Be interested to see on his ownership there. But at 10,400, I can't. It's hard to pay that much for Chesson Hadley. Let alone J.J. Spahn. So I would stick, if I'm open this range, with Simpson and Champ if it's me.
Yeah, Chesson Hadley's one of those guys that he's either like an all or nothing, and that's why it's tough to pay that much up here. And sure, if it's all, it's great because no one's going to own him. And I agree with Spahn. I just can't do chalk Spahn. I know he's playing great. He's T3, T15, T10 in his last three events. He's coming in great form, second place here last year. I just can't do it. I'd rather go all the way up to Webb Simpson because – in a field like this, he is the class of the field, so he makes sense at 11.
Head and shoulders.
Yeah. Like, so I can justify paying it in my mind if you really want to, because it's just that big of a talent gap in some of this. It's also tough to pay 11.8 because then when we talk about talent on a field, you really got to go into the 6Ks. And we'll get to some that I don't mind. You want to stay out of there if you can, I think.
Right.
I'm with you. So I don't mind Cam Champ either at 10.9 because we work Team Cam Champ over here. I got no problem with them. You mentioned course proof. We've talked about it time and time again. At the same time, if it fits in the builds, I'm cool with it. I don't really want to go into 6K this week, so it's tough to get up there. If I have to pick one, I really want Webb, actually, because I don't think anybody's going to pay 11.8 for Webb Simpson.
I agree. I think that's a really good way to put it. Balance for me is going to be the way to go, so I probably will avoid this range altogether. But like in GPPs, I don't mind at all. Putting Webb or Cam on the team and building down from there.
And at the same time, like we talked about with the little fan share piece, you talked about your past event history, and if people look at past events for all these guys, there are a handful of guys in the 6Ks year after year, especially at this event, that finish very high. So you can use them. I'm not saying don't. It's just it's much more uncomfortable than it was in weeks past.
Yeah, for sure.
So. All right, let's get into the 9K range. You got Lucas Glover up to 9,900, a guy that had to get his card back this year. You got to love it. CT Pan at 97. You got Russell Henley at 95. Austin Cook, the defending champion, is only 94. Kind of surprised me a bit. You got Kisner, who everybody's going to love here. He will be the chalk of this field, most likely, at 93. Luke List at 91. And ZJ coming off a rough week in the OHL at 9,000. What do you like here, Jesse?
Yeah, for me, one of my favorite plays really is starting with Glover and kind of going down from there. He has 7th, 14th, and 17th in his last three events this year. Didn't play last week. His last event was the Shriners Open there where he finished 7th. So I am a fan. His course history is okay. He does have a, you know, a top 10 in six tries and another top 15 in there. So it's not like
I believe off he's a Georgia charts. Boy. I think he's a Georgia boy too. A Georgia Tech, something like that.
That sounds right. So, but he's just playing well. So I do like him quite a bit this week. T.T. Pan is another guy who I can play as well. He's 13th and 6th in his last two appearances here and just made a bunch of cuts in a row on tour, including a 16th Mayakoba. And he's top 20, you know, base or top 30 in his last four starts. So he's playing really well too. Kisner, you know, with Kisner, he's not playing very well coming in. But he's I can't ever get Kisner right. So he's like a JB Holmes or Ryan Moore type of guy for me. Like, I just never get him correct. He was playing a lot better. Well, yeah, I mean, he was playing a lot better last year coming into this tournament. He finished third at the Tour Championship, which was his prior start to the RSM in the previous season. This year, he's coming off a missed cut at the Mayakoba. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. He did finish fourth here last year. Luke List, I think he's okay. He finished 13th here in 2016, but he is coming off a missed cut there last week at Mayakoba. So, interesting to see on him. Zach Johnson, another interesting guy who I always get wrong. He's got a bunch of missed cuts here. He's coming off a missed cut. So, I mean, I'd say a lot of people will back off of him. But, you know, if ZJ gets his putter going and can wedge some in there, you know, he can contend in a place like this. I mean, he reminds me of like a Kisner, Jim Furyk type of guy who have had some success here. So I'm surprised he hasn't had more success at this golf course. And, you know, he's finished 8th last year, but like I said, a bunch of missed cuts, about 50% on made cuts here. So he's okay. But yeah, for sure, Glover and T.T. Pan.
Yeah, ZJ is one of those guys, you know, another local guy. He's $9,000, coming off a TA here last year, but he's coming in kind of weird form. But he is one of those guys that can play a short course pretty well. Like you said, if his putter's there, he could put up some low scores. We've seen him do that time and time again, so I don't hate him at all. He let a lot of people down last week because he's usually pretty cash safe for me, and that kind of – it surprised me. But he wasn't even close to making the cut last week. He was a wreck. That surprised me quite a bit. But I think that will scare people off. So I think at $9,000 for a ZJ at a discounted ownership in a field like this, that's pretty good. I don't hate that at all. I am looking at guys like CH3. He's made 7 of 8 cuts here. Of course, missed his one last year. We had 7 previous made cuts in a row with a T13 and a T9 right before that, also coming off a missed cut last week. So 91 makes it very interesting there for CH3. I love CT Pan this week. Really, really, really like CT Pan this week. His two appearances here at T13 and T6. When you talk about greens regulations and T to green game, one of the top guys on tour these days. He's really swinging the stick good. So CT Pan at 97, I like a lot. And then Austin Cook, you know, he missed a cut his last time out, but he's a birdie machine, as we talked about previously. Again, him and Tony Finau led the PGA Tour in birdies last year. It's a fact I'll bring up a lot this year when it comes to these kind of courses where it's a birdie fest. I like him a lot here. You know, you talk about course history. Last year was his first time playing here, and he won. He never played here before. So $94 for Austin Cook, I think, is really, really good. Coming off a missed cut, I will definitely be looking at him. So Pan and Cook are my top two guys here, maybe looking at Hal and ZJ if I want. But I like the idea of starting lineups with Pan and Cook up top there for me. All right, in the 8K range, we got the likes of Joaquin Niemann, still kind of staying at that little price point. HV3, who is just on fire and finally got the price bump. I kept saying last week he was too underpriced. And Denny McCarthy, Sam Ryder got the price bump as well. Chris Kirk, Wee Kim, Peter Uihlein, Jim Furyk, 8,200. Love Mark, Brian Harman, and Sungjae Im at $8,000. This is a area that I like a ton, Jesse. What do you like here?
Yeah, I'm a pretty big fan of this region too. I'll definitely go back to Sam Ryder. You know, in his last four events, so he made the cut here in 2017, finished 61st, but his last four events, he's 54th, 3rd, 43rd, 4th. So
I'm seeking a trend.
I'm seeing a trend there, yeah. I'm hoping another top five, which would more than pay off his price at 8,600. So I do like Ryder quite a bit. I think Varner's very playable, especially at 8,800. He's only played here one time, but he's just playing really well. Sixth last week, 15th the week before. Missed a cut at the Sanderson and 14th at the Safeway. So he's just – this fall swing has been good for him, minus that one missed cut at the Sanderson Farm Championship there. Niemann – I don't know. So I don't know if he's like working on something in his game or, you know, just trying to figure stuff out because he was 60th last week. Had two really, really bad, like poor middle rounds. And kind of, you know, sandwiched those with a couple of okay rounds. And then 10th at the Shriners. I thought he was figuring it out at the Shriners, but it'd be interesting to see, you know, how highly touted he is. Cause if he's not, I do like him quite a bit. If he is, you know, I would maybe back away a little bit because I think he's got a little bit of more miscut potential. So just keep that in mind. And then, yeah, I'm going back to Sungjae. I'll just keep hammering him all fall swing long here.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with what you said on Neiman. I think he's a really intriguing play. Ownership-wise, if he's low-owned, mm-hmm. I'll take that chance all day on a guy at that talent level. But the way he's playing – it doesn't feel right playing a chalky Neiman. It's very right. odd. So I'm with you there completely. I love HV3 again this week. I was all over him last week. I've been a big fan of what we're seeing from him. And, yeah, he can't go off the rails. You know, three starts ago, he missed a cut. But when he's been playing this fall swing well, he plays really, really well and finishes high in these fields. So I like him at 88. I love Sam Ryder as well at 86. A couple plays that I will definitely be on this week. An interesting one if you want to look at, you know, past event history. Weekend missed a cut last time in T27 for that. Coming in pretty decent form at 8,400. He could be intriguing as a low ownership play between Kirk and Uline, who have already been very popular according to Fanshare. And then M, 100% agree. We already went over that. It's pretty much going to be a standard almost every podcast. And then Brian Harmon at 8,000 could be very sneaky. T4'd here last year, back-to-back missed cuts here prior to that, and then he made three straight cuts prior to that. He has two top tens here and his six starts. Coming in, you know, not in the greatest form, but this is kind of what we saw last year when he kind of started rounding in the form for the California swing. He got the T4 here, had the winner off, and then came out strong in California. I don't mind him at $8,000 as a low-owned play. He does like this course, and he fits these kind of courses very, very well. So I think he could be a low-ownership option as well. But my favorite plays here, HV3, Sam Ryder, those will be core plays for me this week when we get to talking. And I think M and Harmon at $8,000 each can be very, very interesting. All right, let's get to the 7,000 range, Jesse. I'm not going to name them all off because we are back to a large field. But a lot of good, talented young golfers in here. Give me some of the guys you're liking.
Yeah, obviously, we're back to full field, so there's so many people in the $7,000 and $6,000 range per the usual from DraftKings. So starting at the top, Bud Cauley. Big fan of Bud just to be, you know, anyways. He finished eighth here last year and has made a really good, impressive comeback this year after you know, getting hurt in a car wreck at the Memorial, and so I will be on him at $7,900. Wierenski is fine. I think it's at 7,800. Stewart Cink again fine at 7,700. You know, Cink's made four straight cuts here, and three in a row on tour. So 7,700, I can take some Stewie Cink for sure. Michael Thompson's interesting to me. He finished 17th here last year, 13th the year before. He played the Safeway Open. He finished 17th there. Before that, at the Web Tour Championship, 21st. Boise Open on the web, he was 6th. So he's taken, you know, about a month off. I'd say he'll be under the radar, and I think he has some kind of sneaky potential there at 7,600. So, you know, I would, you know, GPP only, of course. I wouldn't play him on a cash team, but, you know, 7,600. Are we staying above 75 or are we just going full seven?
Go for it all.
All right. So we'll do a little speed round here. Nate Lashley, another guy who I think is interesting, finished 49th here last year, 20th at the Sanderson, 17th at the Safeway Farm. So he's coming in with some pretty good form. Kramer Hickox, another guy who's a web grad, 29th last week. Mike Hobie's never played here, but 7,400, quite a good price on him, I think. Anders Albertsen, who I think we've made some fans out of, just judging by some chatter in the Slack chat.
Yep.
55th last week. He made the cut. He had an okay weekend, nothing great, but, you know, 28th week before Sanderson's farm, he was fifth. So 7,300, like him quite a bit. Taylor Gooch is another guy who's interested in me. He finished missed the cut here last year, but played the Sanderson, finished 14th, you know, made some cuts on the web. I think he's okay at 7,300. Norlander, you mentioned him earlier as a kind of a course history guy. He finished 54th here last year, second the year before, been on the web, and, you know, so he'll be interesting. He's a punt, you know, if you've got basically 7,000, he should be next to not owned. So, you know, he's worth a shot or two in some GPPs, but I wouldn't go all in on him, but Norlander's another guy who I think is playable. Tip.
All right. Yeah, no, we echo a lot of these here. Bud Colley, I think, is a very intriguing play at that price point. With Richie Rawinski, I've been on him since Sanders in every tournament out here, and we finally got the price bump up to 78. He's been a 6K guy for a while. Really, really good form. This guy is going to should have a pretty good year. Stewie Cink, not much else needs to be said if you're a regular on the podcast. $7,700 for Stew Cink in a field like this. Yeah, I'm pretty much going to bite on that carrot all the time. I love the Michael Thompson call. I had him circled down here. A pretty decent course history the last 2 years, and he's made 5 or 6 cuts here in 2 top 10s. So in 4 top 25s, and he's $7,600. You mentioned T17 at the Safeway and then finished the web very, very strong. A guy like Ryan Armour, we know he plays these kind of courses really, really well at 75. A guy I like a lot, and I'm worried because of his week last week, it might go up. But Brian Gay's only $7,500. Finished third here last year, has 2 top 10s and 6 starts, made 4 or 6 cuts. The reason why Gay might not be as popular is Keith Mitchell, who everybody loves, is $7,500, because it seems like they love him because he can be a first-round leader, but they forget there's a 4-round tournament. So I don't know. It's really interesting. He you know, T54 here last year. He's been making a lot of cuts. I'll give him that much. And he's a really good, you know, birdie maker. It's just a matter of keeping the ball in play enough. So he's interesting at 75. I get it. You mentioned Lashley. I like that a lot. Hickok, you mentioned him as well. T29, T23 to start the year on the PGA. He's very intriguing at 74. Albertsons. And then a couple more down at 71. I think Vaughn Taylor at $7,100. We mentioned how he's been a birdie machine. He had 21 birdies here last year when he finished T8. He's made 4 straight cuts coming into this weekend. Perfect type course for Vaughn Taylor, 71. And then the other guy at 71 would be Johnson Wagner. He's coming in, you know, 5 of 7 cuts here at T17 here last year, coming off back-to-back made cuts with a T35 and a T25. This was a guy that was going to lead the tour to become a real estate agent. Apparently he's found his new niche on life and loves golf again. So I don't know why you'd leave to go get it. I don't know. It blows my mind, but that's not me. But $7,100, you know, he's – pretty cheap for the field we're in here, in my opinion. So there is value down here at 71 if you do pay up top. I don't mind Taylor or Wagner. I prefer, again, not to go to the sixes, but there are a few we'll talk about here in a minute. All right, 6K, loaded. Some that stand out to me, I'll just go through real quick. Joel Dahlman's only $6,900. Don't get that. He's a cut machine. He stood out to me a lot. Ted Potter Jr., actually, $6,900. He plays the shorter courses very well. I know Pebble and here aren't exact correlations, but the way he played that and some other short courses, he finished T13 here last year, coming off of T14 his last time out. He's only $6,900. My boy Jesus Rodriguez, $6,500. He was 62 last weekend, and he finished very, very strong. Let me pull it up right here. There he is. He finished T55. He fell apart on Sunday. But he's made 3 straight cuts on tour, $6,500. I don't hate that. Couple others real briefly. Andres Romero is only $6,400. He's 2 or 3 cuts made here at the T27 his last time out, and he's made 5 straight cuts on the PGA Tour. So he's a cheapie. If you want to do course history, again, it's throwing names out here. Bird is $6,400. Missed cut last time. He's made 5 of 7 cuts here. And then last but not least, he'll probably be popular because I think Mayo mentions him every single week. But he is a birdie maker, and one of these weeks he'll put it all together. But Sebastian Munoz is only $6,300. He's made 3 straight cuts on tour, missed cut last year in his first time here. But for $6,300, you can do much worse. If I had to come down here at all, it'd pretty much be Dahlman, Ted Potter, or Rodriguez at 65 if I have to. What do you like down at the 6K if you have to, Jesse?
Yeah, like you said, if you have to, it's a full preface there. Corey Connors at 6,900, I think, is okay. He's finished 37th here last year. Form coming in is less than to be desired. Miscut second. So, you know, if he can figure it out, Stefan Yeager, whatever, 16th miscut, 14th in his last 4, 29th here last year. So I think he's okay at 6,800. Tom Lovelady, you know, is 65. He missed a cut here last year, but he finished 25th in his last start at the Sanderson's Farm a couple weeks ago, so he's okay as well. And then last but not least, Will McKenzie. If you don't know who he is, Google him. And when you Google him, you'll completely forget about why you Googled him. But that's okay, because it's okay.
And when you when you give us a rating and review, let us know what you found.
Yes.
You give us a rating and review.
I was going to say, it's Will McKenzie. I figured it out. Will McKenzie, I'm guessing he's been hurt. That's what my guess is, because he's miscut WD.
Probably with a broken miscut, heart.
Right. That might be what all the WDs are about. But there's just one thing I look at, and he kind of stood out on it from a course history standpoint. And so that's the only reason that I even Googled him to figure out who in the hell he was. I've heard that name before, but I just didn't know exactly who he was. So I'm guessing he's coming off injury. He'll be 0.1% owned. You know, it'll be me and you owning him in the $5 GPP. So if you play him, you know, that's a, but like I said, Google him and then look at the pictures. So that's the key.
Hit images.
You know, he finished last year. He made the cut here. Miscut the year before that, but he was second in 2014. So, you know, he's probably going to be rusty coming off injury. Just got another guy to keep your eye on, though, too.
All right, let's do what we do in weeks past. We kind of narrow it down by price points. We'll kick it up top in the 10K and above. If you have to pick just one, Jesse, who are you picking?
I'll go Champ.
I'll go Simpson to make it different. In the 9Ks, you can give me two.
Glover and Pan.
Yeah, Pan and Cook for me. So we're seeing some similarities, which is good. And the 8Ks, go ahead and give me two here, too.
Ryder, I'll go Ryder and M.
I'll go HV3 and Ryder. So, right. And we all know the M factor as well. In the 7Ks, go ahead and give me four or five that you want to narrow down. There's so many of them, I can't like pick this one.
Yeah, I would Bud, Sink, Albertson. And Michael Thompson is a deep sleep there.
Yeah, I got Sink, Thompson, Brian Gay, Albertsons, and I'll throw in Vaughn Taylor. All right, if you had to pick just like one 6K guy, who would it be?
One 6K guy, I'll go with Love Lady. He's just the highest up on what I'm modeling here. So, and that's, you know, it's off of the Safeway, so. Take that for what it's worth.
I'll make it different. I'll go Mr. Rodriguez at $6,500 because he might miss the cut, but when he's on, he's a birdie machine. So,
yeah.
And he showed that on Friday. I think he went 400 or 500. He turned it on the back nine on Friday. So that's what he can do. All right. Let's talk busts of the week. Jesse, who do you have busting?
I'm going to go out with Spawn, man.
I like it. I hope that's true. The other one, I'll go with Chesson Hadley.
He's going to burn us. You know that, don't you? JJ Spawn is going to finish second, and he's going to burn us.
Yeah, Hadley and Spawn are probably both top five. Who do you got looking at as your early look at core this week?
Glover, M, and Ryder.
I like that. I like that quite a bit. My core looks would be like CT Pan, HV3, Sink, Gay, that kind of a handful of guys right there. But I like yours as well. All right, picks to win. Give me kind of one of the higher price guys and kind of a long shot guy.
I'm gonna go with Glover, who gets some inspiration off of the win last week from all the old people, all the geriatrics pulling it at home, and he brings home his first win in I don't know how long. And then down low, let's say M gets it done finally.
I like that. I hope he does. I'll go CT Pan up top, and then I'll go – I'm probably going to regret this, but I'm going to go HV3. I'm going to go HV3. I might regret
ballsy.
That.
I like it, though. I like it. Yeah, I mean, he's due.
He is. He's been literally like half a round away right now. He's really, really close.
Well, yeah, but he's also never won. Like, I think he's won one tournament over in Australia or some shit.
Yeah.
His whole career. Yep. The Australian PGA Championship in 2016.
That would definitely make someone do then, if that's the last one. If Kuchar can do it, HV3 can do it. This might be the year that guys get back on the saddle, which would be pretty
I
wild.
Hope so. I'd love it. And then Finau maybe wins once this year.
Oh,
one day.
He's winning.
a major. Well, his first win will be a major.
We will do kind of a preview-y predictions podcast during the down season because I don't think we mentioned it yet. This is the last real tournament outside of the Hero until January. So. Yeah. we're going to have a little bit of free time to get some stuff done outside of our personal lives, and we'll schedule some random stuff in here and there. And I know last year we had Rob Bolton on. Maybe we'll try to find some different people to chit chat with or whatever. But I think we need to do some kind of prediction, like bold predictions thing, because one that I can dig in deep. Well, one's going to involve Tony Finau. Just put it that way.
I'm with you. He wins all four majors.
No, I'm not going that bold. I know there's another show that did that with Dustin Johnson. I'm not going that bold.
Yeah, but well, that was actually like not bold really on DJ. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. But yeah, pick the number one player in the world. Yeah,
right.
That's good. But that wraps up the DraftKings part of the podcast. Any final thoughts on the week? And can any maybe any thoughts on how the fall swing's gone?
I don't want to talk about how the fall swing's gone, but I do want to harp on what you mentioned earlier as far as the wind. It is important to look at Thursday and Friday wind, because if a guy's playing in high winds at Seaside, he's going to have trouble, whereas, you know, it's going to be easier on Plantation Golf Course for Thursday and Friday. Like you said, they play Seaside Saturday, Sunday, so it doesn't matter. But so this is a really important week to watch the weather and the wind finder, or, you know, W Underground or whatever, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, and join us in the SD Slack chat. More and more guys are starting to show up in there. We've got all sports popping off in there.
Yeah.
And we answer as quickly as we can. Most of the time, one of us is usually always hanging around somewhere in there. Just add us in it, and we'll get to it a lot quicker. But you can ask us questions on the matchups or the tee times and the scheduling. And if we know anything on weather, we'll help you out. There's different ways we can look at it. But it's like I said, it's supposed to be rainy all week, chances even on Thursday. So the ball's going to stick wherever you are. But Thursday, I saw winds like maybe 7 to 10 miles an hour at the most. But Friday, they're talking anywhere between 15 to 20 miles an hour. That'll be a big difference on the Seaside course. So
yeah,
something to definitely keep in mind there. And, you know, maybe the part of Thursday gets rained out and doesn't even matter because it screws up the whole schedule. But stuff we can take a look at. But with that being said, everybody, check out the podcast on Twitter at AlwaysPressDFS. Jesse's at DFS Golf Gods. I am at BDintric. Again, we'd really appreciate it if you give us a rating and review on iTunes. It would help us out a ton. And if you have any ideas on stuff coming up, let us know. Otherwise, enjoy this week and hopefully the off season, and we'll have a couple sneak peeks here and there for you. But with that being said, this was the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast, previewing the 2018 RSM Classic. Catch you guys later. Already the show goes on.